What if we told you that 90% of your current team would have to be completely different when you get to your next revenue milestone?
The sad truth is most businesses outgrow their original team members, but few CEOs recognize the warning signs until it's too late. After our last episode, we got on a Telegram, our golden Telegram, and we were chatting about, so what do we think those different price points are for different team members? Like, how much would we be willing to pay for what level of team member? And I think we went to AI and asked AI as well. What are your thoughts?
I think there's definitely price points or investment levels in terms of the CEO investing in team at different levels to get a different result. Some people, you're just wanting them to be boots on the ground and getting stuff done. And then you also need to be prepared and aware that you need to pay a bit more for those strategic thinkers.
Yeah, totally. We want to avoid the task ticking or overly heavy task ticking. We need some of that strategic stuff. I remember us jotting down some price points. What did we say? I think we said the task tickers we'd be prepared to pay, like us and the kind of clients we work for, up to kind of $40, maybe $50 at a push for a task ticker, but ideally.
Yeah, it really depends on their skill level. So if they're more of a tech VA, then you're going to be expecting to pay closer to the $40. And some tech VAs who are really good and add in some strategy, you're going to start moving more into that $50 to $60 an hour. And then when it comes to those boots on the ground, maybe it's like copy and paste tasks, really, really simple tasks. I've actually been on teams where people are paying $9 an hour to people on that kind of level, all the way up to 25, 35, and then pushing up to the $40 an hour. But what I would also say is that when you've taken someone on and they've been with you for a year and they've learned a lot of new skills, or you've given them more and more responsibility, it's also fair to then relook at what you are paying them per hour. And if you've given them more responsibility because they are actually really good, proactive, they've been good at those tasks that they are ticking off, if you are up leveling them, then every year have a look at their hourly rate and say, is this still fair? And do they deserve a higher hourly rate now?
You want to keep them and keep them happy. So paying them $19 maybe the next year might mean you keep them for an extra year or two instead of burning through them and then having to try and find the next unicorn.
Yeah, exactly. Because it also takes a lot of training and a lot of hand holding when you have lower level team members. And it's not their fault, they just don't have the skills yet. So then that means you need to also take into account that you'll be paying a higher level team member, could be even somebody on $70 or $80 or $90 an hour, to then create training videos for them, step by step SOPs. Some of them are going to require links to everything and screenshots to everything because they just don't know how to do all of the tasks yet. So when hiring the lower level people, you need to take into account it's either your like time or it's another high level COO, project manager, web developer kind of level person that you're going to need to pay for their hours to train that lower, investment team member.
Yeah, totally. So the next level up, who are those people? What roles are they performing and what are we paying them?
Yeah, so what I've seen being on multiple teams for the last 3 years, and obviously having my own team, it does tend to be over the $40 an hour, maybe up to about $65 an hour, just depending. And this is where you're going to get someone with more technical skill, especially if you're looking for tech VAs, people that are going to work in your course hub, create your funnels for you, hook up your payment checkouts, order bumps, all of that good stuff. They are going to have a higher level of understanding. Something to keep in mind, even if they are at the $40 or $50 an hour, they may not know your specific system. So this is something I've seen. There's so many different systems, and we sometimes still need our higher level team members, like COO, web developer, to even train them on our specific checkouts and order bumps and systems, for funnels. Now, these people will be way quicker to train because they already have that technical understanding. So it's not the same as training somebody without that, who has no idea how to do things. This person already has an understanding. It's just that they need to know how it works in your system specifically.
Yeah, totally. That tracks with everything I've seen on teams as well. Like good tech VAs that I've worked with on teams in the past are typically $35 to $45 mark. And definitely they're at a different level. They need a different level of training. You just are showing them how to do things differently a lot of the times, not explaining the basics of how to do a task.
And then something else I've noticed is that when we create, for instance, we use ClickUp and we use it for our launch templates, or if we're launching a new digital product, to create the product, to create the carts and all the things like the tags and the active campaign or whatever system you're using, there's always a lot of steps involved in creating a cart and a checkout and a sales page, for example. Now, with a lower level person, you're going to need to put every single step in that ClickUp SOP, and you create the SOP, the step-by-step system, within ClickUp. You don't house it in a Google Doc with 50 million pages that no one's ever going to read. Side note, you house it in your project management system. So inside ClickUp, let's say we have, the steps to create a checkout, then you'd have subtasks or checklists and everything. Now, the lower level person is going to need a lot more subtasks and explanation, where somebody higher level, you can just say, just create me that checkout with a 20% off discount that disappears on Sunday. They're going to know what to do. You don't always have to task out now the 25 steps that are included in doing that task.
Yeah, totally. That's where scalability comes into play, and also just being able to spin the stuff up quickly. Like every CEO we've worked with has been in that boat at some stage in their business where they've wanted to just spin up a new offer quickly. Inspiration has struck or a download has arrived. And now we need a new blah, 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 blah. And then it's like, oh, but it can't just be, quickly gotten out. And I think there's a little bit of a juggle there as well. There's a little bit of a balancing act, between having a system that's easy and scalable and like fluid enough to be able to do that stuff really rapidly, and then also not half-assing it. Like, yes, you want the full on, proper launch, follow all the steps, et cetera, but you also don't want every new idea to need a 3 month leeway, to implement. So there's definitely some balancing act, and I think having the right skills at the right level there is like key. I think often when we're dealing with the CEOs that are trying to push through to that kind of seven figure level, that's where they start bringing on the strategic help that can help them kind of wrangle the juggernaut, as it were, to make it quicker for them to get these things through the pipeline. Because yeah, we've always got to juggle. We've got to have a balance between like having a lot of structure and having all the steps and having all the complexity, but also just being free, right, as business owners. I feel like that becomes even more obvious and more of a power struggle or between the team and the CEO when it gets to a certain level.
Yeah, I think so, because entrepreneurs are naturally visionary and they have lots of ideas, although they'll always say, oh, we're scaling back and we want to focus on one thing. And how many times have we
How
heard
many
that?
times have we heard that?
And then it's like, oh, I have an idea for something new now. Like, I'm going to do a group program, I'm going to do a membership, I'm going to do a mastermind. And we've seen this, it's no one in particular, it's everybody, and including us.
Yeah, totally. I was going to say, guilty as charged.
So there's a really good book called Built to Sell, and in there he teaches one offer, one client, one checklist to deliver, so that you have one offer, one ideal client that you're speaking to, so that your messaging becomes easy. And then from, the delivery point of view, you can create an SOP and checklist where, it's one checklist to deliver. So anytime you create a group program, a membership, a course, a consulting offer, whatever it is, just run it through that filter. Is it one offer for one client and one checklist to deliver? Now, obviously, the checklist can be, it's not just like five steps that you tick off on a piece of paper, but that's the concept. And when they are building businesses to sell, the businesses that sell the best are the ones that are simple in that way, where it's really easy to understand what the product is. And that can be, a course, a certification, a membership, whatever it is, to one ideal client and one way to deliver it every single time. And that's what makes it really easy to scale.
Yeah, that makes sense. It is challenging though to keep ourselves on track as CEOs. Like you've said, I mean, it's so many of the CEOs that I've worked with, and I'm sure it's the same with you, are that manifesting generator, multi-passionate, A-type entrepreneurs. So it's literally, an idea a day kind of vibe. And so it's quite difficult to know how to wrangle that. And I think for us as well, being a supporting team member for CEOs, we can offer them a little bit of clarity or pushback And that's often a role that we take on where it's like, hang on a second, but now we've strategized all this other stuff for this quarter. Which of these things now need to be deprioritized? Just kind of, you can't have it all, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think also what happens is people get so excited about creating their new product and the content of it. And we've had, you know, in the past, sometimes they re-record their entire course or they record a course from scratch and they haven't even tested the market to see if it will sell. Sell it first and then create it as you go along, which is so hard for people to get their head around, especially if they haven't been in the online space for a long time. They want to create the back end and all the systems and make sure it's going to run properly and record professional videos and update their workbooks and change their course hub and all the tinkering around. And then it's so beautiful and amazing and they believe it's so valuable, but they didn't test it to the market. And then when they sell and they do a launch, they get a bit disappointed because they go, oh my word, if I look back, how much time did I spend on this? How much did I pay the videographer and the editor and the team and my project manager and the VA and they're like, I didn't even break even. But now remember, you might not break even on that first launch. You probably won't, especially if you did go down the more flashy route, whereas if you just sold it and then teach it on Zoom the first time, get feedback, and then maybe the second or third time you launch that program, then you can go down the let's record it and edit it and spend more time on it, because now you've had feedback from actual people who are going through the program and you can tailor it and make it perfect for them so that the next time you launch, it's even more ideal for those people because they've given you the feedback.
Yeah, I think that's where your higher paid team members come in as well. Because those kind of next two tiers we spoke about, between $50 and $100 was your problem solvers kind of thing. And then from 100 up is really your strategic thinkers.
Yeah.
And that's where you really need your strategic. Your strategic thinkers are the ones that are going to tell you, don't be bloody stupid. Do not record this. Go and sell it. Like, no, absolutely not. That's what you're going to get from a strategic thinker. You know, that's what you're going to get from a coach, a mentor, somebody higher level on your team, where you're not going to get that from, you know, your problem solvers or your task takers. They're just going to say, yay, a new project, let's go, because they love that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not up to them to make these big decisions in your business. At the end of the day, you are the CEO. You have to make those decisions. And then you could bring somebody on like a COO or a very experienced project manager, or you can hire a coach or consultant. A lot of what we end up doing is we kind of do both because we've done consulting and coaching in the past. That's what I used to do. I was just coaching. I wasn't diving in and doing the project management and helping with copywriting and being COO. That's only something that I've done in the last 3 years. But it is super helpful because people need the practical, you know, getting it done and managing the launch and managing the team as well. I found like there was a bit of a gap there because a lot of OBMs, like an online business manager, just don't have the experience and they actually don't know how to do a lot of the technical tasks themselves.
So let's just define those different roles, right? Because I think a lot of the time people hire people as these roles and they're not exactly clear on what those roles are supposed to be. And so sometimes on team, we see people, you know, earning an OBM rate, for example, and they're not really performing the function of an OBM on team, for just as an example. I've seen that in the past on teams. So let's just let's give people the basics of like, who are these different team members? Like, what is a VA? What are the typical tasks a VA does? And then we'll work our way up the food chain.
Yeah, so VA or tech VA, you might have a social media VA as well. They are just getting things done for whatever, you know, promotion you have, or maybe operations or client care and that type of thing. They are not project managers. So a lot of VAs, even tech VAs, just they don't have the capacity for it because they need to come into your project management system. They need to see what they need to get done that day because they've probably got more than one client and they need to get on with it and just have all the assets ready, all the copy, all the images, context of what they need to do. And that is not the VA's role. That's the project manager's role.
Totally. And then as we go up towards the more kind of problem solvers, let's say, so your problem solvers that you're paying a little bit more, they're going to think things through. They're going to actually solve things that maybe your VAs or even your tech VAs escalate up to them. So they're at the next level of support, but still not strategic thinkers. Now, what exactly is an OBM? What is a COO? Like, what's the difference between those things?
Yeah, so online business manager, I've actually seen people do their big launch breakdowns, and some of them will have a launch manager and a project manager. So the launch manager is like more the overall launch strategy and like what are we going to do when, all that type of thing. And then you can still have a project manager or an online business manager underneath that person who's doing the nitty-gritty, like this is when this gets posted, that's when that email needs to go out. This is when we need to put the countdown time and when that needs to disappear. And then they're tasking out to the team and they're making sure the team are hitting their deadlines.
Okay, so that's a launch manager. What's a COO?
That's a chief operations officer, and that person is much higher level. They're working closely with the CEO. So the COO and the CEO are working closely together in terms of matching the CEO's vision of what they want to do and what they want to sell and how their brand wants to be and everything about the business. The COO is making sure that that can operationally happen when it comes to the marketing, when it comes to the day-to-day, when it comes to delivering and the client care. But they can only do so much, and that's why they tend to need to have more team to be able to delegate to. But the CEO and COO would be getting together on meetings and brainstorming and, spitballing ideas. And then the COO would go off and create a more structured plan from that conversation, and then start to task it out. And it depends how big the team is. Sometimes in the beginning, you're the CEO and you're the COO and you're the project manager and you just have a VA. So you need to fulfill all of those roles in your business. Like that's your job. You have to do all those things because it's your business. Then you get to a point where you decide, I don't want to spend my time doing this. So it's either going to cost you your time or your money. So you have to decide if you want to invest in that and not have to do all of those roles. And obviously, as you make more revenue, you can bring on those roles to take that off your plate. But that is an investment that you need to then decide. And sometimes it's because you actually don't have the skills. You don't know how to go and make these ideas happen. You either have to learn it or you have to hire someone to help you.
I think a good rule of thumb, or a good like who you need at what level in your business kind of guide, is like how much time do you want out of your business? Like how much free time do you want? And that's going to determine like which team members and at what levels you bring on. Like I want to go and do a beach walk every day for 2 hours. I want to work 2 hours less. You know, what do I need to fulfill that goal? That might be like when you starting out, you're at that like just made the six figures and you're starting with your hiring, you're just going to get VAs to meet that goal, right? Because you just want to free up a little bit of your time to go and do something. But once you're talking about being able to go regularly away on extended breaks or maybe take extended sabbaticals, then you're going to bloody need a COO to do that. Like, you know, so you've got to like your expectations and your income, obviously, your income goals and all the rest of that good stuff, all that's got to go in the melting pot for you to decide like what level you need to hire at. But I think you need to go as, you know, you need to get to that COO level as quickly as you can, really, because that's where you start buying yourself freedom.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And we've seen that with clients who've taken sabbaticals. We've helped a client set everything up and take 3 months off. The way that we were able to do that, and we touched on this in episode one a bit more, so go check out episode one if you haven't listened to that yet. But yeah, we set everything up with a lot of, trainings, SOPs, step by step, recurring tasks. We figured out what was needed to keep the business running while our client was on sabbatical. And then some of the other team members were able to run it without her, but they needed their guidance. They needed those, click up to become the project manager so that, as you take a sabbatical, there's always going to be an income drop. You cannot expect the sales to be the same. They will not be the same when you are not there selling. But there could be some sales coming in that cover the team, that keeps your business ticking over. Your social media keeps going out. All the podcasts, for example, that you've recorded are going out. So it's not like you've disappeared off the face of the earth because you've gone on sabbatical. You need to figure it out, usually with a COO, and task it out, have recurring tasks so that those other team members, like your social media manager and that kind of thing, can keep things going while you've taken time off, so that it's not so difficult when you come back from sabbatical to start up again.
Okay, here's a good question. What would you say percentage of turnover wise CEOs should be spending on team?
Oh, this is quite a tough one, and I would actually recommend using something like Claude AI to help you with this because it's quite nuanced And I've seen it with some of my past clients, people that are scaling big time. I've seen them publicly talk about it on their social media where they intentionally reduced their profit margin because they knew they wanted to scale. So if you're making a 50% profit margin, that is incredible. Brick and mortar businesses, you'll know more about that than me because you had a
No.
brick and mortar that you then sold as a franchise. I think for brick and mortar, you're lucky if you're making a 20% profit. Like people are smiling.
Absolutely. Knowing your numbers is key. I'll tell you something I've struggled with in my business as a CEO is this whole thing of scaling and team. I know that holds me back as a CEO for all the reasons we discuss, all the things we see on other people's teams. What do you need to be saying to yourself, or what decision-making questions do you need to ask yourself to free yourself of that mindset? Let's talk about warning signs, things that tell you it's time to scale, it's time to employ, it's time to whatever, and then the other side, warning signs when it's time to bring it back in.
Yeah, I think one of the things is if you're struggling to deliver on what you've sold, if you are doing X amount of website builds or with coaching, you've taken on so many coaching clients or you've sold a group program and now you've got 30 people in there, you're going to need help to help with the delivery of it. You're going to need someone to be a community manager. You're going to need someone to download those live Zoom sessions that you did and put them in your course hub. That shouldn't be you anymore. And I think for a service provider, if you're battling to hit deadlines and you're like, I've got so many builds in the bag and I'm just not getting to them, I think that would be something. So really,
Yeah.
like when you start to miss deadlines and you start to find that you're working over, doing these all-nighters or working till midnight and starting to feel really tired, I think that's like a really
Yeah,
good warning
totally.
sign. Yeah.
Yeah. That leads to the whole famine and feast thing as well, if you're a service provider, because that kind of it's inevitable, right? So when you're busy with delivery, then your marketing slows down, especially if you don't have the big team, and then just leads to these kind of peaks and troughs in your business, which is what we don't want as CEOs.
Yeah,
Okay,
and I
so
think.
that's warning signs and times to scale. Now let's talk about the flip side. When do you know that your team's too big, inefficient, juggernaut? Like, what are the warning signs of that?
But something that I highly recommend implementing is team time tracking because you do not know what your team is up to. You don't know what they're working on. Sometimes they could be working on the wrong thing that's not really moving the needle because somebody mentioned, oh, you know what, we really need to clean up the Google Drive. And then it's like, oh, great, let me go in and clean up the Google Drive. And then 20 hours later, they're still cleaning up the Google Drive. Don't get me wrong, I love organization. It's very nice to have a clean Google Drive. I've hired someone when I knew I had the money to invest and I did want my Google Drive to be sorted, and I knew, okay, I'm going to invest in this. And I gave them parameters and how many hours I want you to spend on it. Let's get this done. And that's a decision for me. But that's not going to bring in any money.
No,
Fixing my Google
totally.
Drive, cleaning up these things, doing all the back end, it's lovely and it's wonderful. But where are you at? And do you need that to be done? So this is why we implement team time tracking and we use Timing App. So Timing App is a recommendation I got from you actually, and it's such a great tool to automatically time track, but get your team on some kind of time tracking, get those projects organized in the time tracking software so you can see how much time went into that launch, what are they actually working on, and surprise, you'll find out. Your
Yeah,
team,
certainly.
especially if you've hired full-time team members, they're not even hitting their hours every week. They don't have enough to do.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we've seen this on Teams so many times. But the thing is, the CEO needs to also track their time.
Oh, yeah.
It was so necessary for so many on so many different levels. Like just understanding yourself in terms of like delivery and intentionality and time you spend ideating versus working in your business or whatever. If you don't have those metrics, like you can't make decisions, you know, even hiring decisions. I think that's key, tracking the team time. Okay, so team time, picking up that they're not fulfilling the hours that they've committed to, that's a big red flag that you're team heavy, as it were. When you hear the CEOs grumbling about team spend a lot, when team spend is a massive percentage of the income of the business, and where the CEO starts feeling like they're not paying themselves, right? That's a big red flag.
Yeah, I think so. I think that sometimes people start to hire and then they get a bit of a bloated team, and then they focus a lot on the operations or delivery or recreating courses, and they kind of forget about the marketing, and they don't hire for the marketing. So they're not hiring a shit hot marketing manager or like as a marketing list who can actually help with the detail of how do you execute the strategy? Like, what does it look like? What's working right now? Because I'm seeing a lot about what worked a year or two ago is not working anymore. So what is working now? You can't rely on what worked a year or two ago because people's buying behavior has changed. So you need those people with their ear to the ground and practical marketing experience. And I would like to see also like what are they producing? What results have they got? Do they understand launching? Do they understand online promotions? Do they have any idea about this before you do go down a marketing manager or whatever route, make sure it's the right person. It's really, really important. But I do think the marketing sometimes gets dropped. So you start hiring for all the operations and delivery. So you've got a bloated team on that side, but you don't have the team doing the right things on the marketing side and sales.
We see that a lot on teams for sure. And going back to the comment you made about having somebody that's really ear to the ground and knows what's happening now, not last year's strategies, right? To a large extent, that's what you've got to be careful of when you go to AI for this information as well. Because depending on what AI you're using, it's not always trained on like the latest information. And that is where having a really shit hot strategist is going to really give you a lot more information and relevant information for today, especially if they work on a lot of different teams. We come with that experience because that's the beauty, right, of seeing implementations across lots of different kinds of businesses like we do, you know. So you can see, oh, so and so is trying this launch method, and that person's trying this launch method, and this one's trying this real strategy, and that one's trying that. In my case, I think I've got 55 clients on care plan. A lot of them are coaches, you know, they're all doing courses and launching all the time, etc. There's an underlying theme, right? Like a tone. Do you feel the change in the economy, in what works, in how we market things, in what kind of marketing to do? Like you really pick up the trends really quickly when you've got that benefit of being a service provider to so many different businesses. And that's where hiring someone that's like a funnel strategist, like they just eat, sleep, breathe funnels, you know, has so much value because that's what they're doing. They're mining data from dozens, in some cases, hundreds of clients, and they're seeing these trends purely a numbers game, which you as an individual CEO don't get.
The other thing is people that are working on our level, like a COO and, tech strategist and that type of thing. We're also following the leaders of the industry. If you don't know who the leaders of the industry are, you're not going to be able to pick up what they're talking about. They'll start slowly, and you'll start seeing a few posts, and people will start talking about it on their podcast, and then you're like, ah, this is now a trend. Everybody's noticing that buyer behavior has changed, and I'm seeing a lot of that right now, where people are talking about, even things like having a short open to close cart, they're saying people need a longer time, have that cart open longer. Whereas before it was like, oh no, don't have it open too long because it's too long for them to make a decision. Now they're saying people need more time to make a decision. They want to talk to someone. They want to have a live chat on your website with a real person. They want to have videos from you, or they need to speak to someone. They need more reassurance because some people have been burned in the past. So there is a little bit of a trend of people aren't buying immediately when the cart opens. They're waiting till that last day when the cart closes because they've needed more time to chat to someone, to see the social proof, the testimonials. They want connection. They want to make sure that that person's going to really deliver on what they're promising.
I see this a lot in funnels as well, like funnel strategy, etc. I mean, it's a silly example, but it's perfectly illustrates this. You know, a few years ago, we said to people, for your opt-in pages, make sure your subscribe form is above the fold. You know, right there, people need to put their name and their email address and, you know, click a button to get that thing, whatever they're opting in for. And we now know that that is not the strategy that works today. Today, you want a strategy where it's a button that leads them to a form on the same page or on a different page. And we know that the psychology behind that is micro yeses. So by clicking on that button, the person's saying, yes, I want it. And then it's taking them to the next step. And these little processes of micro yeses just helped the conversion of the funnel. Things change constantly in the online world. And I think that's where having, you know, really good strategists and really good technicians, like having people that are at the top of their game on your team is really key. When it comes to online, I mean, we are so blessed with online business because we can have that access. You know, we are connected to incredible people, yourself, myself, you know, that we can pull information from and get advice from, etc. I go back 20 years ago to a brick and mortar business, and that just wasn't how business worked. You know, you needed to be a big shot to have access to the big shots, you know, and the knowledge and whatever. Mm-hmm. But now we're not seeing that. In a way, it's really cool that it's not this hierarchy, you know, it's not like the cools and whatever. There's more equality, let's say. You know, it's like brain power and chutzpah that puts you at their level, you know, rather than like, you know, who you work for or where you were born or where you studied or, you know, who, what family you were born into or whatever. It's changed, right? The environment, especially when it comes to online. We value things differently.
More of a level playing field, as I say. Something else I wanted to touch on is that, you know, we've talked about the team members, and then there's the other level, which is coaches and consultants. And, you know, some people use the word interchangeably, but, you know, somebody that's going to consult or mentor or coach you on your business and give you all that information, people pay a premium for that. So people will pay $2,000 a month, $5,000 a month. I've seen people paying $10,000 a month or for a VIP day. Those are around $18,000 for the day because they are willing to pay for that knowledge, years and years of knowledge, and also coaching skills to help them get over their blocks and all that kind of thing. Now, what's unique with us is that because we've done, like I've done coaching and consulting, and you have naturally consulted people, when you hire us as a team and as part of your team, you're actually getting the coach included. So you're getting our coaching and the consulting that you would normally go off and pay $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 a month for that kind of support. And they're not doing any implementation. Your team needs to implement. They're not implementing.
Totally. I mean, the amount of knowledge we have between us is just like, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. You know, there's that saying, who is it that's quoted as saying, to be an expert at anything, you need to do 10,000 hours. Like, it's way beyond that, what we've spent, you know, over the last 10 years of being involved in online businesses. It's like nuts. And now with AI, even more so, you know, and oh gosh, just the plethora of information that's available online is incredible. But that can also be a bad thing because there's so much, like how do you sift through all the rubbish to find the gems? So again, that's where you need somebody that's done a lot of implementation as well, not just talking. And they can really kind of sift through the chaff, as it were, and you know, find the gold nuggets and have real world things to implement. Talking about coaching and implementing, we've had this discussion before. I definitely think it's a trend at the moment that let's say traditional coaching or the traditional models of coaching are maybe nearing the end of the heyday, as it were. They're kind of going off the bubble a little bit. And I'm seeing other sorts of businesses coming in. And the general feel out there is that people are no longer prepared to invest as much in education. Up until now, it's been all about education. Like if you could sell education, coaching, whatever, it was gold. Everybody was paying for that. But now there's a bit of hesitancy. I'm seeing that in a lot of my clients' businesses. There's definitely hesitancy with paying for education. It seems that people are more interested in paying for implementation or paying for results, like transformation. Like that's really what you need to be selling today rather than just selling a coaching program. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that they want something really tangible, really practical. You know, how do I actually do this thing versus just being told about it and talking about like kind of the coaches where it's like you pay to be in my energy and then you feel amazing and you go off and do stuff. That's nice. But there's a lot of people that weren't really able to get the results from that type of coaching, although it made them feel great at the time. Even Tony Robbins talks about it in the Netflix documentary, like the percentage of people that actually go off and do it, even after his events, is a small amount. So then people keep coming back for the buzz. Right. The other thing that I'm seeing that's still selling really well is a certification program because it's tangible. It's like, I'm going to learn how to be this thing and I'm going to walk away with a certification. It's not that easy to do. I'm going to have a lot of support along the way and I'm going to have to, you know, it's like completing, you know, quizzes and tests and you've got to do stuff to get that certification. And I think that's quite a good motivator and it feels more tangible because you walk away with the certification. One of my clients created one for brand photography to become a certified brand photographer, like personal brand photography. Jordan Duval created that, and that sold really well because people then could use her exact system, her processes, her way to find, the right venue for your shoot, how to put the shot list together, how to create, a practical guide for the day, how to put the team together. And so you can walk away with knowing exactly how Jordan puts together her brand shoots because she was a creative director. So she's been working on doing photo shoots for movies and all sorts of things. So it's not just a personal branding shoot that, anyone can knock out and, you can use a few of the pictures. This was like, I want to learn how to do it like Jordan does. And so for that, you can also charge more because they walk away being certified in her exact process and they can use her templates. They can legally walk away with that because that's included in the certification.
And I think memberships are still doing pretty well from my experience and what is working for clients, especially like lower cost memberships to medium cost memberships, not necessarily super cheapy. I mean, the cheapy ones do really well as well. But any sort of membership that gets you more access, like we're seeing things like the Telegram groups, the Voxer groups, that kind of live chat, like asynchronous coaching, like that still seems to be doing well. And then memberships where you get access to the tools that the coach uses as well. I see that's still doing really well. So I think it's like, it's important to know when to pivot. It's important to know when to actually, when it's not a shiny thing and when it's like an actual necessary new offer that needs to be kind of formed. But definitely, I'm definitely getting a sense of some changes in the industry. Different things are working. That and things that worked in the past are not necessarily working as well anymore.
Yeah, and I think you've also got to know your client. So a good example of exactly what you were talking about is a student of mine. She bought my Brand Your Expertise Online self-study version in about September, October of last year of 2024. Her name's Heavenly. That's her actual name. Her name is Heavenly. She's on Instagram. She's originally from South Africa, now living in Belgium, and her parents are in Mauritius. And she first, bought my program, learned how to create an offer, learned how to do a launch. Did it as a course. Now she teaches people how to become a social media agency, how to outsource all of the work and run the agency and scale a social media agency and charge in dollars. And her ideal client is in South Africa because she was South African and now she's like able to work overseas and charge in dollars. So it's like quite a dream of a lot of people here because they can leverage the currency. And so she launched it as a course. It did pretty well. I think she had like a $3,500 launch on her first launch. But then she listened to her ideal client. She listened to what people were telling her. And because they were in South Africa and they needed to invest in dollars, it actually made more sense. Rather than selling a $500 to $900 course, she changed it into a membership. And so now she sells, I think, a $47 a month membership. And guess what? She's making like $7,000 a month on recurring revenue. And she still launches it in exactly the same way. She still does like a 4-day challenge launch with a masterclass, open to close cart every couple of months, but she fills the membership every time instead of having to sell a course that's a one and done. So every time she launches, she gets more people into the membership and she listens to her ideal client who are in South Africa who maybe couldn't afford the investment for $500 to $1,000 was too much for them, but they can do $47 a month even in rands.
And who doesn't love a monthly recurring revenue model? Like I just love a monthly recurring revenue model. I mean, that was really what changed my business, made my business much more stable, much more successful, was when I like actively started pursuing the more monthly recurring revenue model. For sure. That's all I want to do in my business. I don't like the one-off stuff at all. Like not at all anymore.
I think you've done it for so long and there's a place for it for sure if you want to bring in a pop of income. But you touched on it earlier and it's your care plans for the websites. So it's the hosting and the support on the websites in case people don't know what you meant about care plan. And then that way as well, when you have the monthly recurring revenue, it makes it much easier bringing this all back to team when you know, okay, I'm making $7,000 a month or $10,000 a month monthly recurring revenue. Then you can say, okay, cool, now I can spend $1,000 a month on a really good VA to support, the support tickets that come in, maybe you've got to do updates, run updates on the sites that are hosted with you. You could have a VA do that. You can have them sift through your inbox and organize that. You could have them help with your social media to keep your marketing. But when you know what the monthly recurring revenue is, it makes it way easier to make a decision about, right, if I'm making, $10,000 a month, I'm happy to spend $1,000 a month on a VA to help me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was really the key for me. And that's when I grew my team, was exactly when that started happening in my business. Yeah, I love that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about pricing psychology, because this is huge, not only as the CEO in terms of hiring and how you feel about the team members you're hiring and what you're paying them, etc., but also in terms of your offers and what you market to, your audience and how they feel. So we know, for example, this is another one of the things that we know today, 2025 and funnels, that free offers are not how you want to build your list. Because when people don't pay anything, they don't take it seriously, they don't value it. I mean, we've done this ourselves time and time again. We've seen clients do it time and time again, where you've got incredible free offers like a masterclass, a training, whatever the case is, and it's completely free. And all you have to do is, sign up and then you can watch this masterclass or get this PDF or whatever the case is. And people don't pay for it, they don't value it, they don't use it, they don't implement it. You may as well just not even bother. And you build your list with just free people that want stuff for free. They're never going to buy anything in your business. So that model is dead, like dead, dead. I don't recommend free opt-ins at all. Definitely what works better is when people have to pay something. And it doesn't have to be a huge amount. You can start with a low ticket thing. So instead of having a free opt-in, have a low ticket opt-in or whatever the case is. It can be dirt cheap. It can be $7 or whatever. But when people pay for something, they tend to actually at least check it out and use it. And you're then building your list with people who have already put money on the table, and we know that they are ready to invest. So from the like, your offers and what you offer and whatever, that's a nugget for sure that we're sharing. But also in terms of team, I think there's something to be said, like being a CEO and then hiring someone at a top level, like that up levels you as a CEO and your business, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that I would say with the offers, with the freebie versus a low ticket, definitely, or a paid offer for your list building, it does need to be very low ticket because you still want to be able to build the list. So I am seeing a trend of people charging for their, like, let's say it's a 5-day challenge or a 5-day masterclass or whatever, $7. Or the same thing, like you say, it's a lower ticket class. I've seen people also go up to about $97, but you're going to get way less people on there. So it's a bit of a balance, and I think you need to test it with your audience. Like, for instance, this client that I spoke about with Heavenly, maybe with her South African audience, it still works to have a challenge that's free, and then they're coming into a membership. So I would add a caveat there, test it, always test it and just see, because everybody's audience is slightly different. I think if your audience is a little bit more advanced, like, people like us, I don't think you and I would sign up for a free thing. Like, it's very rare that we're going to spend our time on anything that's free, like a free challenge or anything, because we're further along, we're at a higher level. I'd rather pay something for something I know is going to be valuable, and then they can make an offer. That's fine. So I do think it's sometimes there's a bit of nuance in there, and definitely test it. And then, test out that $7 offer for a masterclass or a challenge. And then that way, it's going to pay for your ad cost. You're also going to get a much higher show up rate if people have paid. But then do make sure that you're giving value versus just a sell webinar. Don't charge people and then you're not even giving them any value. So I think there does. Yeah, like, people are more discerning and they do expect to see value. Otherwise, they're just going to bounce and they're going to be like, well, this was crap. So why would I spend money with you?
100%. Yeah, with the low ticket stuff, I think they generally recommend like you want to like really wow people with low ticket, because the vibe right after the low ticket thing is normally you upselling them into a higher value offer. And when you get to the end of this low ticket thing, you want the kind of feel to be like, oh my gosh, she did this was incredible for like a $7 offer. I cannot believe how much value and knowledge and how great this was unbelievable. Imagine if I spent $1,000 on this program, that must be out of this world. Like, that's the kind of vibe you're wanting to give people. So it's not like a low ticket, like, oh, you know, like sort of sloppy seconds or some scraps on the floor or whatever. It needs to actually be high quality, low ticket. But let's circle back round to like how it makes you feel as an as a CEO when you've spent high ticket on team.
Yeah, for sure. I've also seen that they, like a CEO will definitely value somebody's opinion more if they're paying them more. So the people that are maybe, you know, on a lower hourly rate, they're not going to go to them for advice. Or even if they do suggest something, they often dismiss it. And that might be a good or bad thing. I don't know. Like sometimes the people on with the boots on the ground, like they're the ones doing the actual day to day. So maybe do take on some of their feedback or take it on and then interpret it and see how it can be done in a better way. But when you are paying a higher rate, or I also see this a lot with you know, CEOs that I've worked with, they'll have a team and there are amazing people on the team who know a lot, but they'll go and spend, you know, say $5,000 on a VIP day with a coach, comes back with all the notes and the replay, and it's exactly the same thing that the team to do for the last year, but because they paid $5,000 for a consulting day, now they're going to listen.
Yeah, oh my gosh, how many times have we seen that on Teams? 100%. Yeah, that we see all the time. So yeah, sometimes I think just pay your team actually for a VIP day. Actually pay your team and get them on a team day.
Yeah, you know. As COO, project manager, launch manager, the thing is, I'm often more than just a COO, actually. Not all COOs do all the stuff that I do as well. But I have actually done that, where they book me for a half day on Zoom, and then we plan out the whole year, we strategize everything, we go over the offers, who it's for, what are we going to promote when. And a day like that is so valuable. And I have actually done that with some of my clients, where they do book me, and then we plan out the year, and we just strategize instead of them going off to another new consultant or coach who then needs to be debriefed and all the information has to be downloaded from the team, like downloaded from the team's brain and explained to the new consultant. Do you know how much time that takes to explain a complex business to new people all the time who know nothing about that business? That takes a lot of time, bringing in these new, like, random consultants or agencies or whatever. They don't know anything about your business. Meanwhile, you're sitting there probably with a bit of a bloated team who you're not even tapping into properly. Like, it's such a waste. I see that happen a lot too.
So I watched an Alex Hormozi, I think it was Diary of a CEO, I think it was Stephen Bartlett's episode with Alex Hormozi recently. And he had a good tip about hiring team. And he was like, when it's time to like now up level and hire team at that different, you know, that like sort of higher level, you want to hire like the best person you can find. And his advice was that hiring that person brings good people with them. And we've seen this a lot. Obviously, we do the same sort of thing on teams we work on, where, you know, you one or the other of us will get on a team and then you're like, oh, they really need some mentoring, or they need a COO, or they need structure, or they need this, that, and the other thing. And then I can refer them to you, or vice versa. You get on a team and you're like, oh, this person's online stuff is just a mess. Like, it needs a proper audit, whatever the case is. And then, you know, you bring me on team. So it's definitely good people find each other, right? Yeah. And they kind of recommend and bring good team with them. So his advice was like, just hire excellent people, and then those excellent people bring in more excellent people. Yeah. And often you end up getting rid of some of your old team over time, because I think that team also sometimes realizes, you know, as you obviously grow through the different stages, there's different levels, let's say, of ability. And the business just outgrows them sometimes. And then they feel out, right, in terms of the team. Like, they don't feel like, you know, they feel like a bit of an outsider. Now there's all these, like, incredible high-level people all speaking the same language and getting excited about stuff, and they're, like, not quite on the same wavelength. And so I think over time, naturally, you know, you just find those other team members kind of floating off to other clients, and then, you know, so your business kind of escalates. How do you know when it's time to get rid of a team member? We didn't discuss that. Like, what are the big time, like, when you need to get rid of a specific level of team or a specific kind of team member?
Yeah, and I also listened to that episode with Alex Hormozi on Diary of a CEO. And yeah, he was also saying it's like those team members don't tolerate the like people not coming to the party, and that it's so frustrating when you are trying to launch or promo or do something, and then other people are dragging their feet, they're missing deadlines, they're not bringing any ideas. It's like they just can't work together. And definitely, I've even thought, like, I literally have an agency in all the people that I know, like in the world-class team members that I know, from web developers to, anything from doing the brand shoots to doing graphics to tech, everything like that. It's like we have a mini agency anyway. But yeah, that's a side note.
Totally. I think when a team member affects morale or productivity is like a big red flag for me. That's a big, I mean, we in the first episode we also spoke about how, protective we are of our energy and our mindset and whatever. For me, that as a CEO, that's just something I cannot and don't tolerate, is like if a team member isn't on the same wavelength, like if somebody isn't like positive and motivated, like that is a that's a not compute for me. Like we just are not speaking the same language at all, and I need to be on the same language as the team I'm working with.
Yeah, like if they're always on a Debbie Downer, everything's always negative. There's, they're not solutions focused or forward focused. They're always talking about what didn't work and what might not work, and like all the negativity. It can be hard to work with that. The other thing that is really hard that you can't really train is that personality or the attitude. So I would often rather work with someone with a really good attitude, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, especially if they're a, a junior team member. I would rather work with them and be able to show them, hey, this is how you do it. And then they tried and they came back and I gave them some feedback. And now they know how to do it because we've created a training video with step by step. And then they're excited and they're like, wow, I learned something new today. Like people on our level, we actually enjoy teaching as long as like the person will go and implement it and have a positive attitude about it.
Absolutely. And I think there's okay, so let's drop some possible future episodes. In fact, maybe the next episode, we need to do an AI episode. We need to do a bit of a deep dive on AI. And I think that's one of the key things is like how can AI really help us to onboard team members? Because that's huge. I mean, the stuff that we're doing with AI now is just incredible. In the businesses we are working in. So I think we should probably do our next episode on AI because I agree, if you get somebody that's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you can teach, that's a teachable person. As long as they're keen and teachable, teaching someone's the easiest thing in the world, to us. So yeah, if as long as the attitude is good, exactly like you said. Bad attitude, no. I'd say like constantly making errors, like especially in lower level team members, they need to be accurate and fastidious and checking things because you don't want to have to be checking every little task that they're doing. So if they're really error prone and not very attention to detail, I'd say that's somebody that needs to mosey on out of your business because that's not actually helping you. Yeah, that's, I would say those are the two worst things. They're like, if they're a morale killer in your team, go. Debbie Downers, go. And just yeah, not teachable. Not teachable is a big thing for me. So almost you almost need to hire just based on personality. Like the ability, like as long as they're not idiots, you can teach. Can I say that? Is
Don't
that don't hire an idiot.
idiots. That's all we needed to say. I don't know why we were talking for an hour.
Don't hire idiots. That's it. That's the lesson from today. All right, I think we've got enough for this episode. Amazing.